you need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System. Studies have shown that the farm soil we get our vegetables from is dead, meaning it is depleted of minerals. Sulfur is a mineral. Sulfur has been depleted from the soil, which means most people have been depleted of sulfur. Sulfur has been found to transport oxygen throughout the body. You need oxygen. You need organic sulfur. American Voice Radio Network has organic sulfur. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com and then to the Superstore to order your organic sulfur. It's your choice. Do you want to feel better or not? Don't forget to tune in to the Sulfur Hour Plus One on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Running out, jobs leaving the country. Many people cannot afford to eat or keep a roof over their head. Too many can do neither. Messiah's Branch has a mission church in Wichita, Kansas that helps the victims of this banker's economy, the American people, your neighbors. The mission is the last hope for so many Americans. We need your help to lift up the poorest of the poor. These are men, women, and children who once had homes, now in the street. They all need what you need. First aid, beds, food, clothing, and so on. You can send a monetary gift or a box of necessities to 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Or donate online by going to WichitaHomeless.com. Or simply call 316-619-4886. 316-619-4886.
Welcome to the Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of the Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Welcome to Mission Watch Live, another Messiah's Branch national satellite radio program. We are broadcasting from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is October 23rd, 2014. With Mission Watch Live, we are warning the world as it happens. If you need help with anything after this program, please call me. If you need a prayer, you can call me for that also. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, your prayer request, or message. Or you can email me your phone number like a lot of people do and say, hey, I need you to call me back. This is the problem. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682. 620-878-4682. And my cell phone number is 316-619-4886. And, folks, you can always find updates with the breaking news, our ministry, radio program archives, and our mailing address, which is at our blog, which is simply prophecyhour.com. Don't forget, when we ask for a donation for the homeless ministry, or you want to donate to radio, you do not have to do it electronically. While I like to get PayPal donations, you can find all the information you need to mail us a check or money order. Yes, we have a bank account, of course, so we can handle any kind of check or money order, and we'll send you a thank you note back for that, acknowledging that we got it. But anyway, our archives can also be found at prophecyhour.com and branch.podomatic.com. Now, these are both smartphone friendly. In fact, at podomatic.com, they have an Apple app and an Android app on Google Play. So listen up, and I challenge all of you to share with at least two or three other people this radio program. If you don't have money to help, you can help that way by sharing the radio program with others, because folks, we want to get the word out, a warning out there to you folks, but we also, this program is what supports the Wichita Mission Church, because clearly the poor can't do it. Now a prayer, and we'll bring on tonight's guest. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name I pray, Father, I pray that radio goes tonight according to your will and not my will, and that you give everybody out there that listens ears in which to hear the truth, that you'd spread this program wide, and just bless us tonight, Father, with your words and not ours. Amen and amen. Well, folks, you know, as much as I try, you know, while we warn a lot, you know, and say this and that's coming, and I do truly believe we're in the time of the end, and really America is going to turn into a place that very soon that none of you are going to recognize, because if Obama gets his way and brings all these immigration people in, we're talking 10 million a year, up to 35 million or more, and with all the hundreds of thousands of Muslim refugees he's also bringing into the country, or that are already here, that all have higher birth rates than the current populations, whether it's white, black, or whatever, current American populations. In a short period of time, this country is not going to be something that you'll notice. So a place of safety is kind of what I want to talk about tonight, because everybody needs to find that place of safety. And that time, that place of safety in the time of the end isn't a one-size-fits-all solution, you know. You ever bought something and it was one-size-fits-all? It usually didn't work out real well, you know. Maybe 1 out of 10 people that bought that one-size-fits-all, it did fit them. But the other 9 people, well, you know, just really didn't fit that well. Or maybe close, but, you know, it wasn't really for them. But so a one-size-fits-all solution for a place of safety isn't something that's really done in a month or maybe a year. Of course, while it can be, it's generally not that. It's generally a journey that we have taken in while we're in the world, and then when we come out of the world or get saved, that we get into a place of safety. Tonight, we're going to talk to somebody about his place of safety and how he got there and how he got out of the world. And I'm sure you folks that listen to ABR all the time know him well, because it's Frank Stefan. He's got his own program called The Frank Report. He's also a producer for the rest of the programs on here, and I know he is for mine. And sometimes I call him the mad producer or the world's greatest producer, just depending on the mood or the joke at hand. But so let's now welcome Frank and talk to him. Frank, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Dan.
Actually, I've been planning on this program. Clear back when we was talking to that guy on the mountain, and then me and you chit-chatted, you know, the mountain in Arkansas, you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, and we got a lot of that program got a lot of downloads and everything, and people really responded to it. And you and I chatted a little bit about, you know, places of safety, and I said, well, you were in your place of safety, and you agreed with me. And so tonight, I'd like to talk about how you got there. We know that you're there now. We know what you're doing. Well, let's refresh the people. Who are you? What do you do now?
Francis Stefan, and I'm a radio producer.
Really?
Aren't you supposed to now say, hi, Francis Stefan?
Okay, well, Frank, okay, but you created your own radio station. You did a lot more. It's a lot more to it than that, folks. He's kind of dodging the bullet here, so we'll pry out of him.
I'm going to be a difficult interview. You haven't had a difficult interview in quite a while, and it's somebody did this to you.
Gave me a run for the money. Okay, well, let's go with this. You're in Eagle Point, Oregon, basically, out on a hillside or a mountainside?
Kind of a hillside. Foothills, they call them. We live in an actual, the valley we live in is called the Rogue Valley, and it's got kind of a shoehorn, a horseshoe type of thing, you know, where it's long valley if you're standing on one way, but then, you know, there's a part you can't see, and then you go over there, and it's long, not as long, but over that way, too. It's kind of an L, and I live in the hills kind of that crop out there in the middle.
Oh, so you're kind of in the middle of things.
Well,
that
no, I'm actually over on the side. I'm over by the, you know, where the valley ends, because think of an L, and the valley is the L. And the part in the L, you know, the part there that makes the L is a hill, right?
Yeah, where the two lines come together.
Yeah, and that's where I'm at. And then if you keep going back from me, well, there's more hills and more valley, right?
Right, right.
You know, so that's where I live. I'm kind of like on the edge of the valley, I guess you would say. The foothills of the valley.
Okay, so how far is your nearest neighbor?
Oh, I don't know, 1,000 feet. You know, I mean, I don't live necessarily way out away from people per se, but where I live, everybody has 8 acres.
Right.
Okay, so that's where I live. I live everywhere with 8 acres, and
Well, that's pretty good.
But it's kind of a neighborhood. I mean, you can see the neighbor, and you know, the neighbors can see you, and you know, we're not far enough. We're not that far away, but you know, we're far enough away to where you can crank up your stereo as loud as it can go, and you're not really going to bother your neighbors.
Right, right. Well, let's go with this. So where you're at, you're not in a densely populated city.
No, I'm in a rural area, and plus to get here, there's a lot of empty space in between here and, you know, where the population's at. It just happens to be we're in a place where, you know, they had plans on making this into a, you know, like a community sort of thing, but then it fell through. The company thinking about it in the 60s went bankrupt. You know, they got electricity run up here, they got roads cut, and then they, you know, they had all the land surveyed into eight acre parcels, and then they went bankrupt. Right, and so, you know, nothing went on from there. It's a dirt road, you know, and it's up on a hill. It's a real bad road, actually. You know, people don't come sightseeing up this way unless they're on a four wheeler.
So, in the case of a let's say an economic collapse, would it be a place that everybody would come running to a raid for and pillage for food?
Not really, because I mean, they'd have to, if they're going to run out here, they'd have to run 12 miles of nothing before they got here. And then when they got out here, this is a one of these, you know, like a rural community. Everybody's got guns. Everybody, you know, lives far from the store anyway. So it's not, you know, people out here just have food and water on a regular, you know, a normal thing. It's not a, like, oh my gosh, we got to have all this food and water for the end of the world. It's because, you know, we live 12 miles up, you know, 2 miles of bad dirt road to get to town to get anything. So, hey, when you go to town, you get what you need for as long as you can, you know. So people up here got extra because they know, hey, we could get snowed in, we could lose electricity, a lot of things can happen. And, you know, when you're that far away from everything, the whole world doesn't have to collapse to leave you in a jam. So, you know, people out that live out here, you know, they get a clue and they realize. And then after that, you start looking around going, hey, what happens if things really get bad? And the nice thing about living out here is people have room to store stuff.
Right, right. You have plenty of room to store stuff. Okay, so going off of that, so then it's relative. It's a place of safety, so to speak,
for me,
you know, for you. and technically, and for the people that live around you. But when you got this place, did you set out to get this place of safety? I mean,
No. I wasn't thinking about a place of safety. I wasn't thinking about a place of safety when I came to Oregon to begin with. I mean, I guess the closest I came to thinking about a place of safety was when I hadn't even really decided to move here or be here. It was the very first summer that I hitchhiked here, and I didn't even, I left after that for another couple of years, and then I came back. But that first summer, I was at the library, and I did go look up the nuclear attack map.
Right.
You know, that map that shows all the possible targets in the United States, and they got the different size, black circles of where it is.
Right.
So, you know, I did look at that, and this area, all of southern Oregon, is basically, actually, all the way from Sacramento to Portland and Eugene is pretty much nothing, because there's really nothing. There's nothing to attack.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, we don't have any military bases. We don't have any nuclear power plants. We don't have any heavy industry. We don't really have anything to attack.
Unless it's your radio station.
I think it's a little overkill to use a nuke on me. But hey, you know, anything could happen.
Okay. Well, let's back up. You said you were hitchhiking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you said it on this program before, but let's talk about where you came from. You were homeless for a period of time. How did you end up homeless?
Well, it was, I can't blame it on anything, really. I mean, it was my choice, because I had, I grew up in New Jersey and my parents were well off, and, my childhood was quite privileged, and everybody around me wanted me to go to college, and I just didn't want to go. And
right,
you know, and, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You were privileged, and you were rebellious. You didn't want to go to college. You just wanted to do what Frank wanted to do. Well, what did Frank want to do?
Well, that was the thing. I didn't. It wasn't that Frank wanted to do what he wanted to do. I just did not want to go to school anymore.
Oh.
Okay, that was the. I didn't have a plan. See, that was the problem. I didn't have another plan. I just did not want to do that. And one thing is, I won't do things I don't want to do. And you can't make me. And I realized that early on. You can't, you know, really. I mean, if people would get that through their head, oh, well, I had no choice. Yes, you always have a choice. You can just not know. I'm not doing it. You can't make me do anything. You can torture me. You can kill me. You can do lots of things. But you can't make me do anything if I won't do it.
Absolutely.
You know, people really should get that in their head, but that was how I felt about school. And no, I didn't have another plan, which was, you know, dumb on my part, but I was young and dumb and spoiled. So my dad had been telling me since I was 13, because my dad was, you know, my dad turned 18 and he was 17 years old in 1929.
Really?
You know, so he kind of had it tough. You know, I mean, welcome to adulthood. The stock market just crashed, and we're in the Great Depression now. You know, so welcome to your adulthood, you know.
Right.
And then World War II, he went in World War II and, you know, fought with the Japanese. And so he had it tough. He was kind of a hard guy, and he was a firm believer in, look, man, when you're 18 years old, you got to go get your own life. You know, you're a man now, and you got to go. You're not living here anymore. You know, I help you as much as I can, but you are not living at home. You're going to go get your own life. And he told me this since I was 13 years old. And also, while he told me that, he also gave me a lot of freedom at 13. Mm-hmm. Like no more curfew and this and that and the other thing, with one rule: you will go to school. You know, I don't care if you come home at 4 o'clock in the morning, but you'll be on that school bus at 8 a.m.
Right.
You know? So, and 18 comes along, and of course I heard this every birthday, and I had paid no attention, like most kids, and 18 came along, and he said, so. You know, and he was already pretty much, realizing I'm not going to go to college. He's like, so what, you know, what's your plan? I'm like, plan? What plan? I don't have a plan. What do you mean? Well, you're 18. You know, when you graduate, because I turn 18 in April, and our school ended in June, so it's like you got 2 months to decide where you're going because you're not going here. You know, and so I, you know, went and joined in the military because I really couldn't think of anything else. And at the time, I wasn't prepared to be homeless.
Right.
That wasn't even a thought that occurred to me at the time. So 3 years later, I get out, and now I took
Just a minute, Frank. Mm-hmm. What era? I'm not trying to really point so much your age, but what era would that put you in?
I graduated
military?
High school in 1979.
It was after the Vietnam War. So
just after. And that was part of the reason I got the deals I got in the military was because they were really hurting for people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, half of my basic training platoon was there because the judge gave them the choice. They could go to prison or they could go in the Army.
Right.
You know, and they were doing that back then. And, you know, because they were having such a bad time getting people to join because of the Vietnam stigma. Okay.
Right.
Nobody wanted any. We were not like today. They're all heroes, right?
Right.
Oh, look at our heroes. Oh, they're on leave. Oh, isn't that cool? Oh, hey, free drinks for you guys. You heroes, you. Yeah, well, things were a lot different when we went into town. They didn't like us. Everywhere we went, what we call townies would try to pick fights with us.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I know the situation, you know, that during those years while when I turned old enough to get drafted within a month's period of time that, you know, Nixon said no more draft. And so that's why when people ask me who my favorite president is, I say, well, Nixon.
Yeah.
You know, well, why is it Nixon? Well, he stopped me from going to Vietnam. And I wouldn't have draft dodged, you know, don't get me wrong, but, I didn't want to go. I ran around with people that were much older than me, and so I knew people that have already went in and some that didn't make it out, and some that everyone that did make it out came back with either a drug or alcohol problem, you know, or some kind of weird psychological thing going on with them.
Well, I missed it by a few years and I didn't go anywhere. They weren't having any kind of conflicts. The closest we got was to go to Iran over the hostages, you know. That was the closest we came, where we had all our stuff packed and we're sitting there waiting to be shipped out, but it never happened. So, you know, looking back, I'm happy, but at the time it was like, let's go kill them all.
Yeah, kill them all like God sold them out.
Young and dumb.
Yeah, well, so young and dumb, and you got out of the military, you know.
Well, then I took a year and I just spent the money I'd saved and just kicked back. I did some bartending, and I just partied for a year like crazy and had a great, great year. It was it was a lot of fun. And, you know, but like anything, you know, you get to a point where you realize, man, you know, I can't go on like this. I just can't. You know, this has been great. It's been fun, but I got to move on. I got to do something else. I'm in a rut. I can't do anything else around here because, you know, all my friends are into this. This is what we do around here, you know. So I figured, that's it. You know, I got to do something else. So I packed up my duffel bag and I headed out to the highway and I hitchhiked out to California.
Well, the land of opportunity.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know. You know, see, TV, that's when I learned TV is a big lie because I get to Hollywood and Vine thinking I'm going to be in Hollywood with, you know, swimming pools and movie stars. And I'm standing on a street corner looking at the sign Hollywood and Vine, and I'm looking around and all I see is junkies and prostitutes. And I'm thinking, yes, well, you know, why did I even bother to come here? I mean, geez.
Hey, they had junkies and prostitutes where you're at, probably.
Yeah, I could have went to 42nd Street in New York. It's a lot closer.
Yeah.
You know? But,
yeah.
You know, so, but that's what I did. And then from there, you know, it was, It was kind of, you know, at first it was kind of rough because I didn't know anything about being on the road or being homeless or being on the street or anything like that. And it was kind of tough, but, you know, I learned, and after about, I was only going to do this for about 6 months, and then
right.
It was kind of tough, and then I got better at it, and I thought, well, this isn't fair, you know, because now I'm actually enjoying this, so I'll just do another 6 months, and I'll enjoy this, right? And, well, 6 months turned into almost 7 years, and, you know.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so, well, I got really good at it, I got to say, man.
Well,
I really enjoyed it.
Frank, not to interrupt, but to interrupt, you really hit a nail on the head problem with homelessness. But we're going to we'll talk about it when we come back because we've got a break in about 30 seconds. But so Frank Report, when's the Frank Report on?
Oh, let's see, noon Pacific and 8 p.m. Pacific. And they're both live shows. It's not a repeat of the other one, except on Friday the 8 p.m. show is a live show because I take off early on Fridays. And, you know, but other than that, it's 12 noon and 8 p.m. Pacific time, and that's when it's live. Of course, it gets in the archives eventually.
Right, right. And, folks, you can find it right there on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, and we'll be back with more Frank in 3 minutes.
Pastor Dan will be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Studies have shown that the farm soil we get our vegetables from is dead, meaning it is depleted of minerals. Sulfur is a mineral. Sulfur has been depleted from the soil, which means most people have been depleted of sulfur. Sulfur has been found to transport oxygen throughout the body. You need oxygen. You need organic sulfur. American Voice Radio Network has organic sulfur. Go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com and then to the Superstore to order your organic sulfur. It's your choice. Do you want to feel better or not? Don't forget to tune in to the Sulfur Hour Plus One on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Unemployment insurance running out, jobs leaving the country. Many people cannot afford to eat or keep a roof over their head. Too many can do neither. Messiah's Branch has a mission church in Wichita, Kansas that helps the victims of this banker's economy, the American people. Your neighbors. The mission is the last hope for so many Americans. We need your help to lift up the poorest of the poor. These are men, women, and children who once had homes, now in the street. They all need what you need. First aid, beds, food, clothing, and so on. You can send a monetary gift or a box of necessities to 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Or donate online by going to
WichitaHomeless.com or simply call 316-619-4886. 316-619-4886.
Back. This is Pastor Dan Catlin, and you're listening to Mission Watch Live on the American Voice Radio Network. Folks, please remember to pray tonight about a donation for our work with the homeless and poor from our mission church in Wichita, Kansas. Of course, the homeless are poor, but we're also talking about the poor folks that come from all over the city looking for food, clothing, Bibles, prayers, all kinds of these things. Because they need, the homeless and poor both need what you need. These people, a lot of them are very hardworking people that just can't make enough money because they're bound up working at McDonald's or doing other things or just not making enough money to put everything in, to get everything that they need. Yes, and they're caring for their children. And a lot of people bring children over there, especially during the summertime. We get more children in the summertime because they're out of school, and folks bring them over for lunch. But they also bring them over for dinner or to come over and search for clothes for them. So we care for children also. But so support us so we can care for the people that the Father sends us. You know, we get no help from the organized churches in Wichita. Hey, as you can tell, you know, we are different. We're not a 501(c). We are a church. And we're also, you know, messianic in nature. In other words, meaning basically we just keep different days in them. And, you know, they don't look at it like, you know, we're normal, so to speak. We're just a weirdo down the street to take care of the homeless. So we don't get really any help from any of the churches. And, you know, government agencies will refer people to us, but we get no help from government agencies. We don't take government food or, you know, money, monetary thing. Yeah, a lot of people can apply for money for the federal government, and you've got to count all the homeless and tell them how many you had for a meal. Next thing you know, you're taking their names and all that stuff. We're not about that. People just walk in and ask for help, and we help them. You know, that's why people come to us for help, because we treat them with love. And that is really the first answer as to why so many people come to us. They're treated as family. You know, if you don't hear them saying, hey, when they first come, they start saying, hey, where's Pastor Dan at? By the time they leave, you know, usually they're saying dad and mom to I and my wife. So that's kind of how it is. We don't treat them like, you know, we're an agency. We treat them like our family. And we give them God's love, the Father's love. And by showing them that love, we hope that it will draw some of them. You know, just like Paul said, he had to become this way or that way so that he might save a few. Well, we do see miracles in some, and we do have a good track record of people that have been saved or have got out of their situations and are now managers at Dillon's and at the lumber yard and all kinds of different places and have changed their life. You know, whether it's quit drinking or got out of drugs or just needed that special prayer, we help them to achieve that. But these people that come to our place can't support us in what we do. And you know what? While we have a really small family-like congregation, you know, I can't draw a big church of people that make money because nobody wants to come to that poor, dangerous part of town where I'm at. Nobody but the people that are needed, just like Yeshua. He went to where the poor were at and where the sick were at, and that's where we're at. We're down there, and, you know, if it was Mexico, we'd say the barrio. You know, if it was, so that's where we're at. We're down in a place where there's prostitution, and there's drugs, and there's sinners. But isn't that the point? You're supposed to be where the sinners are at. But we're basically missionaries to those people. And folks, while we have no church backing us up, we have been backed up by the Father. This is our 15th year. And now we're coming up on the holiday seasons. Thanksgiving is our biggest holiday. We really need your help. We need your donations. As you know, on this program, I don't sell anything. I don't have anything to sell you. I don't produce any products, and I haven't written a book yet. I've been talking about it, but I haven't had the time to do it for all the work that I do. So I haven't written a book. So we need your help, folks. And really, remember, we are the last hope for so many, and we are all responsible to care one for another. And we, as we're all our brother's keepers, all donations, no matter what size, helps. Let me tell you, $20 donation will buy a guy a pair of shoes, you know, buy some hamburger or some meat. Any kind of donation will help. But, of course, the bigger the donation, the better. Amen. Anyway, the Father notices all donations that come from your heart, so that's what counts. Make sure your heart's into it. You can donate online or by mailing a check or money order, and you can find all that information at prophecyhour.com. And that's at prophecyhour.com. And if you have to, you can call me at 620-878-4682. 620-878-4682. And now we're back talking with Frank Stephan about his life, homelessness, and the final place of safety he seems to have found. Are you there with me, Frank?
I am.
Okay, well, you got out of the military and you decided to bum around for a year. Well, hitchhike around or whatever. But that led to an extended period of time. Let's talk about that a minute. You said you got comfortable with it, you know, after about 6 months. You know, that's a day I deal with the homeless, and we try to find people that are newly homeless. We try to get them out of that position before that first 6 months. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I got good at it. I learned, you know, how to stay clean. I learned about missions. I learned about dumpsters. I learned about how to survive on the street. And, you know, once you learn how to do something, it gets easier. It's like anybody who goes to a job. You know, the first week you're there, it's like, whoa, you know. After you've been there a year, you know, it's automatic for you. It's comfortable. You know, and that's what it became for me. And I met a lot of people on the street. I mean, you know, you're pretty much, everybody who's homeless is alone. But that doesn't mean you're always alone. You know, that. I mean, you know, you talk to a lot of other people all the time. And, I met a lot of folks that got a lot of bad stories why they're on the street. And, you know, some of them are really sad. And I know they were true because they had no reason to lie to me because I wasn't even, you know, I wasn't even giving them a bowl of soup, nothing. You know, I was just sitting there talking to them.
Right.
You know, and I've met doctors, all kinds of people. You know, folks think that homeless people are just, I don't know, some 7-Eleven clerk who, you know, like to get, you know, smoke crack and shoot heroin and that's why he's on the street. And that's not true. Now, those guys are on there too, but like I said, you know, I met a doctor, you know, in Sacramento, and this guy, you know, he was a drunk, and the reason he was on the street and a drunk was because his wife and child got killed in a car accident, and he couldn't handle it, you know, and, you know, that's where he ended up. Things happen to people, and not everybody can handle what happens to them, you know, and they end up on the street crushed, you know. And,
right, they're broken.
You know, and that's that, you know. That wasn't me. See, I basically was there by choice.
Right.
You know, I should have been writing a book or doing a research paper or something. I mean, with, you know, the way I was out there, because I was by choice. And the reason was I just didn't want to. And now we get back to, you know, come out of the world. And I wasn't thinking of that. Okay, I mean, I was not. I did end up going in Sacramento to a Bible school for 9 months.
Right.
And I did read the whole Bible on the side of the road, but my reasoning was not to come out of her. Okay, that wasn't, I didn't even think of that. All right.
Right.
But it
right.
turns out that's what I was doing. Because, and my attitude was that. I just didn't put it together that this is in the Bible because, quite frankly, like I said, I grew up pretty privileged. And the thing was, it all seemed empty to me. It all seemed like, look, I don't want to do what you all are doing. for whatever reason there was, I just didn't want to do what they were all doing. I didn't want to do what my dad was doing. I didn't care about all, you know, all what they cared about. And
right.
And the longer I stayed out on the road, the less I cared about it. You know, and
wow.
You know, so it was like, all right, you know, and I ended up in Hawaii and how it all.
Well, I heard you love Hawaii.
Well, you know, hey, I have mixed. It's a love hate thing with Hawaii.
Joke.
Okay, I did love Hawaii. It's the people I didn't care that much for in Hawaii. But you know, Hawaii is a beautiful place, and I went there with full intentions of living there for the rest of my life. But you know, I was there about 13 months, and I went to three. I lived on three different islands, both sides of the Big Island, and then, well, I met my wife. To be there, and that's why it ended. That's why my road trip stopped. Because when I left Hawaii, I said, "Look, I gotta go. I'm done here. That's it. I'm going back to Medford, Oregon." And that's where I came back to. And a month later, she came back to Medford.
Okay, well, let's come up to this point a minute. Okay, now look. Here you got it, folks. You got a guy. He doesn't really care about, don't know what to care about, feels empty about his life with his family and wants to find something else. Tried the military, that didn't work. Came out, still out searching for something after he left the bartending life or the party life for at that point. But so then you end up going to, you do a Bible study, but you just did the Bible thing for 9 months, but without really thinking of the effect on you. And you also read the Bible, and then so the next thing, you go to a place that you think is paradise, and then you meet a woman. I think that looks like, I see a lot of God points in this.
Well, looking back, I also do, you know, but, you know, when things are happening to you, you know, as they're going along, you don't really always look at it that way. But then again, I got to tell you, my whole life, when I say, you know, I didn't think of it coming out of her and all that, you got to understand, both my parents, my mom was a Lutheran, and my dad was a excommunicated Catholic who called himself an atheist now, okay?
Okay.
Well,
excommunicated atheist Catholic. Okay.
Now, Lutherans and Catholics, they don't get along, okay? They're not supposed to get along, right? I mean, because Martin Luther,
Right.
Luther was the evil was the Catholic Church, all
right? Right, yeah, he rebelled against the church.
Right. So, you know, so they came up with this thing, and they said, okay, you're not going to push Catholicism on him, and you're not going to push Lutheranism on him.
Right.
He can find his own way, right? All right, fine. So I grow up in a house that's basically neutral religion. And but we did have this big Bible that had pictures in it and stuff on our
I know what you're talking about.
Book counter with next to the encyclopedias. You know, I mean, there it was on the book counter. And I used to look through that thing. I never read that one, but I did look at all the pictures in it. And, you know, and I read some parts of it. And as an only child, growing up fairly isolated on a farm, there was lots to do, and I was never really lonely or anything because, you see, and I found this out later in life, in order to be lonely, you have to know what you're missing to miss something.
Right.
Okay, you have had to have something first or at least know about it in order to miss it. If you're unaware of something, you can't miss it.
Right.
Well, I grew up like this, so I never knew about, everybody else is around people all the time. Well, I wasn't, you know, but I grew up on a farm with lots to do. Anyway, so those times in my room, I read the parts of the Bible, and what as a child I took from the Bible was, oh, wow, this Jesus is, you know, and I read it, and I'm like, wow. So, you know, I got it in my head, well, Jesus is like my brother, you know, my invisible brother.
Right.
As an only child, you know, that was cool for me. And I would talk to Jesus that, you know, in that regard, as an older brother. Because that's, as a child, what I gathered from the few little parts of the Bible I read. You know, so the whole time I'm out on the road, I mean, I you know, always talk to God when I was out on the road. You know, there's
right.
nobody else to talk to, and I talk to God, and, you know. So, looking back, especially, I got to say, wow, the whole thing was a God thing. You know, but there's a lot of points that you can, you know, say, well, that's hard to deny. That's a God thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that is my real point of this program. It wasn't an overnight place to where you got now. It was a path that you was on, and you were being guided by the Lord, and you didn't even know it.
Well, and that's the whole thing. You've got to be willing to let go. I know it's a catchphrase, and I know, oh, yeah, that's real slick, and that, you know, everybody says it. But and you know, I almost don't like to say it because of that, but you got to let go and let God. And, you know, that doesn't mean you're a zombie or a puppet or anything like that. You've just got to be open to opportunities that are in front of you.
Right.
And you've got to want to do the right thing. Now, that doesn't mean you're always going to do the right thing. You know, and God's not going to force you to do the right thing. But you're going to be punished if you don't. And you're going to be, you know, you're going to be happier when you do. You know, and that's just the way it is if you allow yourself to do that. And, you know, it's not a huge thing. You don't have to, you know, wear certain clothes or wear, you know, beanie on your head or
right.
you know, change anything. You know, at the time, if somebody would have asked me, well, you know, are you a Christian? I was, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. You know, I know what I believe. I don't know what that means.
Right.
You know, but really I didn't believe anything. I was just willing to, hey, whatever you want.
Yeah,
you know?
Amen. Okay, well, so let's go on with this. So then, you know, you went back to Medford, Oregon, and then your wife-to-be then came and met you there?
Yeah. She followed me here to Medford, and that's where we, you know, then it was time to grow up. Okay, and then we got a little 16-foot Airstream trailer and a dog, and then we
always
got
to have the dog.
Well, sure.
Why is that part of the American dream? I don't know. I don't get it. Go ahead.
And we had a station, wagon too. You know, and then I had a friend here in Medford, and we got together and we opened up a detail shop because last time I had been in Medford, he owned a detail shop and I was his manager of that detail shop. So this time
right.
we opened up one together in a gas station, an abandoned gas station right across from the trailer park where I lived. Well, we did that and we made money doing that. And then me and my wife got a bigger trailer, what they call a mobile home, but this was 10 feet wide and 40 feet long, so it was a small mobile home, and it was a old one made out of 2x2s.
Right.
And we moved that into the trailer park that happened to be right behind the detail shop, so it was really convenient, and it was we got that, and we lived there. And then my wife got a job at one of the mills.
Right.
And time went on, and me and my partner decided that, well, I got a job offer from one of the dealerships
right.
to manage their detail shop, and I told him, well, look, you know, because he had a different style than I did, and
right,
it was very
right.
simple, and we remained friends, and the thing was, it was just a different style where some people feel that every dime that comes in, my needs have to be taken care of first, and then what's left over goes to the business, and my idea is, no, you got to feed the business first.
Right.
Because that's, you know, that's
yeah.
the, you can't let the goose that's laying the golden egg starve.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And I've seen so many businesses fail because of that reason.
Right. So I decided when I got that offer to just say, look, you can have the business and I'm just gonna go take this job. So I did, and I was doing very well money wise. My wife got promoted at work to a operator of a machine, and she was making money very well, and we were just making a lot of money and our costs were almost nothing. And we're piling up all this money, right? So we
right.
decide, well, you know, we should buy a place. And what had happened, and here comes another God thing, And at the time, I really was, I was crushed. I thought, this is terrible. Working at the dealership, salesmen are salesmen, okay? They sell anything. They might be selling cars tomorrow, refrigerators the next day, and real estate, you know, on the weekends.
Next, yeah.
And this guy, I knew this really good salesman. I mean, this guy was good. And he had a real estate license, and he sold real estate on the weekends. And he said, I told him, man, we're going to be looking for a place. And he says, okay. So he kept his eyes open. He found a place. It was a swinging deal. This woman's husband died. She wanted to move into a condo that she already owned. She just wanted to dump her house, basically. This was a house that was appraised for tax purposes at $80,000 that she was selling for $50,000. It was an acre, three-bedroom house, big garage outside, irrigated, beautiful, best deal you're ever going to get in the world, right?
Right.
He got it before it was listed and says, you can have it, man. So I went to my bank where we had over $10,000 in the bank to get a loan, a $40,000 loan on an $80,000 house.
Right.
And they denied us.
Really?
Yep, and they denied us because you didn't have any credit.
Yeah. Well, we weren't the place that God wanted you to be.
We were crushed, okay? We thought, wow, this is the best deal ever, and, you know, we ain't getting it, you know? And so, well, we just kept piling up money. And actually, my wife found this in the newspaper, the two places. There was one place for 5 acres down in outside, a little outside of White City, but down on the valley floor. And so we went and looked at that, and we went and looked at this same day. And coming up this road, I was telling her, man, we can't live here. I can't, you know, we can't go to work every day on this road. Are you kidding me? So we got up here, and it was beautiful. And it was bare land, though.
Right.
And it was $15,000, and we had something like $16,000 or $17,000 in the bank or something, you know. And I don't know what happened. We just decided, yeah, okay, let's buy it. So we bought it, you know, cash, bang, there it goes. So now we had it. There it is. Then I get laid off from my job. But here in Oregon, a lot of people were getting laid off, so they had these special programs where you could stay on unemployment for a year, right?
Right.
Well, so I get on unemployment, and I, you know, I was using my check for us to live on. She was using her check to build this place, and I was working here every day building it.
Yeah, getting paid to work.
Yeah, and so by the time we were done, we were living in a 12 by 70 foot mobile home. You know, everything, you know, sewer, electric, everything set up, everything there. And we had no mortgage, no bills, no nothing.
Yeah, amen.
You know, so that's how
you're in a safe place. Okay, well, we only got a couple minutes left. But so how did you jump to being radio?
Well, you know, I don't know. I became a contractor. You know, I worked for contractors. And then I became a contractor. And I, you know, contractors, when you work, you make a lot of money. When you don't, you got a lot of time. Right. So in that time, I started learning about things and hanging out at a place called the American's Bulletin Newspaper and Reading Room. And I was learning an awful lot about what's going on in America, you know. And along the way, I started, you know, I'm skipping ahead because we're running out of time, but you know, I end up, after a couple years, starting a website, the American Voice website. And then I asked people, well, hey, if I started a newspaper, would you subscribe? And when I got enough people to say yes, I started publishing a newspaper. Well, as a newspaper publisher, I got offers to, you know, be guests on radio and stuff. So I, you know, I did that, and then I did my own show on Truth Radio on the weekends, and it just grew from that to this. Although, when I was in Benson, Arizona, hitchhiking through town there, I did end up getting, I spent 6 months in Benson, Arizona, being a disc jockey at KAVV Radio there. So I did have a little radio experience before that.
Well, see, that's another one of those God things. You got some training for what you was going to do later, and, you know, so you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm getting it now. You know, at the time, it was like I didn't see all that. I mean, things would happen, and I'd say, thank you, God, you know, but I didn't see the whole thing as a big, you know.
Okay, well, let's pause a minute. It's you know, we're going to have to go anyway. There's still more to your story, and we'll do it again sometime. But what I want the folks to look at is, I want them to look at your life and look at as a reflection to theirs. God, if you're praying and, you know, just going along like Frank says, you know, God's guiding you. And, you know, you might be in that place of safety already. You know, and that place of safety is His will. Frank, I believe you're in His will. Yeah. You helped me. When I started out on radio, I would come on your, you know, I've been there since the first of American Voice Radio, and you trained me basically how to talk on radio. You know, the comments that you made and the things that you did. So you blessed all the people that I blessed and all the other people that you're on radio.
And the only advice I have to people, because I hear all the stuff about, you know, move to Belize, come to our covenant community, do this, do that, and the other thing. And, you know what, folks? Look at all of it, and it might be right for you. But you got to do what's right for you. And I have no doubt those people that are starting communities and moving to Belize, it's right for them. But because they, you know, it's right for them, it doesn't mean it's right for you. You got to listen to God and not people telling you where to go and how, you know, what you need to do. You need to just pray about it. I know that sounds, you know, stupid, but it's not stupid. You need to pray about it, and you need to be willing to do whatever it is you feel is right for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Go off through that door. Well, Frank, thanks for being on with me. You know, I'm going to have to say my goodbyes, but we blessed, and
thanks
I'll
for
talk
having
to
me
you
on.
After a while. Bye. All right. See you later, Frank. Folks, check out Frank Report on American Voice Radio and listen to him. He's got some good ideas. Anyway, we must remember there is only one God. That's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for repentant sins. He rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And through him and only through him is the way to the Father. Remember, always, always, always be a blessing to others. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. That's like praying for Messiah's return. Lord our God, Father, King, Universe, ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name that the Father blesses and keeps you, and His face shines upon you, and is gracious to you and gives you peace. Until an hour from now, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the Internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for Messiah's Branch.